Variations on a conjecture. Creativity in evolution and epistemology. The universe looks drastically different today compared to how it looked 13.7 billion years ago. Back then, things were simple. Literally simple. Go back far enough and the temperature was so hot, not only could matter not remain solid, no matter could exist. Our knowledge of the beginnings of the universe stop when we go so far back that nothing but literally fundamental particles could have existed. I say literally, by which I mean as far as we know. The fractions of a second after the universe began with the hottest soup of photons, quarks and electrons and little else. As I say, simple. But from this simplicity emerged, well, all of this. How and why? We could always say that what has emerged because it was determined to by the laws of physics, but that doesn't really get us one jot closer to understanding why and how. The how is that the laws of physics permitted the formation of atoms, which could coalesce under gravity to form stars, which themselves were able to form heavier atoms like carbon, which then spread throughout the cosmos during supernova explosions, which would be crucial in the formation of self-replicating molecules, long chains of atoms that could copy themselves. Chief among these molecules would become DNA, a complex information-storing molecule able to copy itself with high but not perfect fidelity. Error crept into the copying process. These errors, known as mutations, were usually disastrous and prevented further copying of that strain of DNA. But just now and again, some mutation made that strand of DNA more successful, more resilient, more able to get itself copied compared to other variants of itself. That was among the earliest form of creativity. These variants of DNA would go on to encode information about how to construct proteins to build the structure of complex organisms. And that great variety, the so-called diversity of species, is a form of creativity not reducible to those laws that existed at the Big Bang. For not everything in our universe that could have been created by DNA has been, or will be created by DNA. Things could have been otherwise, and that is a key part of creativity. Some things are inherently unpredictable, namely, those things involving creativity. Perhaps the beginning of our universe itself was a creation event, something literally unpredictable given some prior state of whatever it was that existed when our universe did not. But given molecules of DNA, and given a universe, we cannot predict what kind of species might evolve. We cannot predict the events that might cause the mutation on a genome, even in principle, much less in practice. It could be that a stray gamma ray photon from the other side of the universe after a collision between a neutron star and a black hole that we could not possibly have observed until it strikes that DNA molecule in just the right place was the very thing to cause the mutation that led, say, to people or some early species of people. This, so far as we know, this mutation of genes or variation is the earliest form of creativity we know of. The variation within a species is then subject to the selection pressure of an environment, or sometimes to the selection pressure imposed upon it by a person by design. Variation. Selection. If the variant fares better in that environment, the genes replicate more frequently, we say in modern language. If the variant fares worse, then not. In any case, what we get is evolution. We get change and indeed innovation in the biological world. Not merely something new, some creation, but some creation with an advantage, something better, an innovation. Wings or fins or fingers, or more precisely expressed, the genes for wings, fins and fingers beat out the competition in a given environment. If you're competing for food in an environment where speed through the air matters, then your wings may beat no wings. Wings serve as an innovation, a solution to a problem of survival. To be precise, the wing itself is part of what is known as the phenotype of an organism, how the genotype, the complete set of genes inside each cell of that organism, is expressed in the environment. The wing itself is part of the environment which helps to get the genes of the organism copied. It is the genes that are getting copied, not organisms. You, after all, are not a perfect copy of either your mother or your father. But some of the genes in you are perfect copies of the genes in your mother and or father. It is they, the genes that have been replicated, not your parents. It was a mystery, a problem, for those who insisted on a particular reading of something like the Newtonian worldview, the so-called clockwork universe, to account for something like the diversity of species. What seemed to be obvious creativity in the world, the options seemed to only be, on the one hand, the laws of physics, allowing us to predict in principle the existence of dinosaurs, tortoises, bears and finches appearing if only we had enough information and a cosmic calculator of a kind. Either that, or there must have been a designer, a supernatural creator of the universe, itself populating a mechanistic world with life forms. It took the genius of Charles Darwin to himself conjecture a new idea. We did not need to refer to physical laws of motion nor to divine creators. Instead, nature itself provided variation within a species and selection in or by the environment, and this was how change occurred gradually over time. This is how evolution occurred. This was how new species were created. Variation and selection is a means of creation, but it is creation without design, at least in the natural case. Darwin himself, in his book On the Origin of Species, begins his explanation by referring to the commonly understood method of breeding desired characteristics into domestic animals and plants. In other words, artificial selection. This kind of selection allows people to design animals to some extent. That process is not blind. People wanted a smaller dog, so continued to breed the runts of the litters together, making ever smaller dogs until one ends up with a chihuahua. But the natural environment cannot see ahead as a person can, nor does it have a will to choose the smallest, tamest, most easily trained dogs, for example, as people do. The environment is infinitely complex, and variation within a species will cause evolution to take unpredictable turns. But in any case, there is variation, and something must do the selection, whether it be nature itself in a blind, no-design way, or people with some design in mind. This explanation, powerful though it is also subtle, and people underestimate it. It has since been repurposed for how people learn and how systems which allow for human civilization and flourishing change over time. And so we hear phrases like trial and error, guess and check, conjecture and refutation, create and criticize, error detection, error correction, problem, solution. All of these dichotomies are ways of explaining how it is that something that was not there before is there now. Something has been produced. But in truth, there is also no deep dichotomy here. Take, for example, Karl Popper's original way of phrasing this, conjecture and refutation. The conjecture is a guess. The refutation is the encounter in the world that tells you your guess was incorrect, refuted. But here's the deeper point. Even the refutation is a conjecture. It's all conjectural. It is all, as Xenophanes, the 5th century BC ancient Greek poet said, a woven web of guesses. It's all guesswork. So your conjecture, your new bright idea, is a guess, and so too is your check. You have to create a way of checking. You have to create a way of checking that guess against reality or against our best and deepest explanations. Whatever the means of checking is, can take quite some guessing, some creativity. The jewel and the crown of the physical sciences is the experimental test, and as any experimentalist will tell you, designing, machining, and ultimately assembling that apparatus will take quite the feat of creativity, a whole different set of rounds of guessing and checking just so we can test some purely theoretical idea. Experiments are not easy. Physically observing things is not easy. You have to have a theory of what you are looking at. And as we like to say, what we observe is to be explained in terms of what we do not observe. These are not trivial matters, And it means, because the fundamental theories of reality are about the unobserved, they therefore consist of conjectural knowledge, guesses, the core of stars, unobserved, the Big Bang, unobserved, dinosaurs, unobserved, evolution over large timescales, unobserved, the movement of tectonic plates, largely unobserved. But never mind any of that, because even the observed is guessed. Even with our most powerful telescopes, all but a tiny handful of stars still appear to be pinpricks of light. They are that distant. We do not observe them as they are. So never mind the core, we can't even see the surfaces. We do not observe them as they are. Super hot furnaces of nuclear fusion. We guess at that. We guess at how our eyes work to produce images in our mind, and we guess at how our telescopes collect and focus light. Sure, it's not a completely random guess, untethered to reality, and this word guess covers everything from that, which has already been refuted, through to that which has not yet been. In other words, it covers both good explanations and the alternatives to our good explanations and everything in between. Non-fiction and fiction alike. All of it. Guesses. And this is precisely why Xenophanes explains our situation as being all as a woven web of guesses. Our knowledge, all of it, is created. It is not derived from perfectly true axioms resting upon perfectly inerrant rules of inference. How could we know the axioms, by the way, were perfectly true, but by guessing that, for one thing? And nor is any of it carved in stone by a divine and perfect deity. But even if it was, it would still be us, fallible human beings, interpreting the stone carvings. We interpret our world in order to create knowledge of it. We create, then iterate. And these days, perhaps we might want to speak about our ability to deliberate and accelerate, especially when it comes to matters of technology. What do we need? What do we want to improve? And how can we get to it faster? Especially in biotechnology and medicine, we want to accelerate, but we must deliberate first. Consider what paths may lead to ruin, as well as what might work. Happily for us, we have our imaginations. Not every test needs to be performed in the physical world. Our own minds are virtual reality machines, and so we can readily dismiss, by deliberating, entire branches on the tree of options before us. Or we might talk about our ability to ponder and progress. We want our civilization as a whole to improve scientifically, technologically, politically, artistically, morally. We want to make progress, but it is none of it inevitable. No special force is pushing or pulling us forward except for us. It's just us here. Gravity does not pull us towards progress, nor do the laws of thermodynamics, nor Everettian quantum theory. No physical explanation mandates progress. Our physical laws merely have the form that progress is possible. But we must make the choice, and the right choice, again and again, fast enough so that the problems do not overtake us. Or we might consider misconception versus better misconception. We begin in error and correct some errors, but we never get to the final truth. We cannot correct all the errors. We merely get to a better misconception, objectively better misconception, fewer errors, where some errors have been corrected. David Deutsch has said, so much confusion on the point about what science itself is, and indeed knowledge more broadly, could be fixed if we replaced the word theory or law by misconception, just so we could be reminded of the fact that we are not in possession of the ultimate final truth. There is never a reason, therefore, to be dogmatic. We do have good explanations, and that's good enough. Indeed, it's a wonderful thing that even our best explanations are always incomplete, because that means progress will always be possible. A better state of affairs, where we have not merely created, but innovated, generated something new, which is superior in some way. More useful, true, or beautiful. We can speak of a triad of progress, therefore. Imagination, creation, innovation. New ideas begin in the imagination. Perhaps they lead to something in the real world, a creation. And sometimes that creation solves a larger repertoire of problems. It's a true innovation. I have moved, the astute listener may notice, rather smoothly, too smoothly perhaps, between biological evolution and the innovations generated by modern people, and have said there exist similarities which all reduce to a kind of trial and error, variation and selection, or conjecture and refutation, guess and check, and so on. All of that is true. But then, what is the difference between these things, biological evolution, and what people are doing with their minds? There is a difference, so what is it? The difference is that biological variation is blind. It is a solution posited first, absent any problem. The mutation that happens can happen to the offspring of a perfectly healthy organism, and that mutation might be seen to have occurred completely unnecessarily. Indeed, in almost all cases, it will have been not only unnecessary but downright deadly. The mutation that causes the misfiring of a heart valve or blindness or any of the many genetic deformities that occur in organisms due to mutations. Only the tiniest sliver of them are harmless, and of those, only a smaller proportion still are going to be actually advantageous. But that is enough to get the whole system going, evolving. Biological evolution does not see ahead. It cannot plan for the future. On the other hand, the mind of a person generates creative, explanatory conjectures which can indeed see ahead, or at least guess ahead. The guess a person makes, a mutation of an existing idea perhaps, and some other creative ingredients, can be planned or criticized in the abstract, in a mind, and not just physically. That is another difference. Biology can only conduct its experiments in the wild, out there in the world, literally killing off organisms in the process. But we people, with our creative conjectures, can criticize and kill them off in our own minds without ever performing a real-life experiment. As Karl Popper says, we can let our ideas die in our stead. So there are your differences. Biological evolution, completely blind, and often conjecturing absent any problem, versus thinking about what might work and then testing it as a solution to a problem already encountered. But if it's all as simple as that, why would any of it be controversial? Why in particular is this Popperian view of knowledge creation rejected by so many, dismissed or ignored to various degrees? I don't know exactly, but I sense that it is in part down to a certain kind of intellectual's need to prophesy, to confidently assert what the future is going to be like, what the problems are going to be, and what is going to happen to their fellows in civilization and society. Society has always had a demand for the soothsayer, the wise person who can see the signs and portend the future. We have not entirely escaped this. To some greater or lesser degree, people today are still fearful of what might happen tomorrow or next year. We all want to prepare. We want to know the future. We want a guide, a fortune teller. But just because tribes and pre-enlightened societies have always had a demand for such people does not make it rational to continue to organize society in this way, with the soothsayer up there with the chief directing the way in which society should move. So let us also throw the modern-day so-called futurist into that bucket as well of irrational prophets. Modern versions of ancient soothsayers try to extrapolate. Some parts of science sometimes have shown how mathematical extrapolation can be a powerful tool, but ignorant of knowledge about whether or not a set of data can indeed be extrapolated, people are liable to regard it as some kind of universal tool and to ignore all I have said about literal creativity. Some things just cannot be predicted. In particular, that which is created. Namely, in the minds of people, or via, let's say, biological evolution. But if your business depends upon you making confident so-called predictions, in reality prophecies, about the future, modern soothsaying, then you must reject any explanation which claims such a thing is physically impossible because of the creation of knowledge, which is itself a process which is literally unpredictable. The growth of knowledge is unpredictable. So, the modern intellectual invested in telling others how the future will play out will dismiss Popper and therefore fall back to this notion that knowledge is a process of generalizing, often by some highly technical means of justifying a truth to some degree of confidence that they can even calculate. This all gives the veneer of mathematical precision, a a coat of scientific-sounding paint and the airbrushing of rationality. Guess and check? Too simplistic. That's what they will say, without being able to say why it's too simplistic. People are part of the physical world, so they say, and like the rest of it, perfectly determined. Well, yes, it's true, determined, but in fact determined to be unpredictable. And conjecture and refutation, the actual way knowledge is generated, means knowledge is forever partitioned off from certainty. It remains conjectural, not certain. And anyone can conjecture. It flattens the hierarchy, therefore. Again, sometimes anathema to some members of the intellectual classes. If anyone can guess the future as well as anyone else in this world of rapid change due to human innovation, then what is my role as a soothsayer or modern-day futurist? Best to just deny all of that, because not anyone can calculate a linear regression or justify their claims using the designated set of my community's academically approved criteria. And what about all those scientists who claim Karl Popper was wrong anyway? Those scientists who claim induction or its intellectual descendant Bayesianism is really how knowledge is generated. As David Deutsch in The Beginning of Infinity says, quote, "Whatever scientists may have said about where their discoveries came from, they eagerly addressed interesting problems, conjectured good explanations, tested them, and only lastly, claimed to have induced the explanations from experiment. The bottom line was that they succeeded. They made progress. Nothing prevented that harmless self-deception, and nothing was inferred from it." End quote. In other words, it does not matter what scientists say about how they discover what they discover in the main. Their claims are either good explanations about what they're doing or not. A pilot may well think that angels bear the aircraft aloft and are controlled by the hydraulics and electronics, but that has no bearing on the truth of that claim just because it's the pilot making it. A pilot can fly a plane very well, even with a terrible explanation for how the jet engines actually work. Likewise, a scientist can produce good scientific explanations without knowing that it is their mind which has guessed and checked that explanation. They did not derive it from observation, no matter what they might imply or what they might think on the matter. And no physicist or mathematician, no physical scientist or philosopher, no intellectual is better than any other person at guessing the future. As Karl Popper writes in Conjectures and Refutations himself, quote, "Not even the greatest physicist can anticipate the secrets of nature. His inspirations can only be guesses, and it is no fault of his or of his theory if it is refuted. Even Newton's theory was, in the end, refuted. And indeed, we hope that we shall, in this way, succeed in refuting and improving upon every new theory." End quote. This obsession many have with anticipating the secrets of nature, as Popper says, or knowing what the future will bring, or the content of our yet-to-be-formulated explanations of the world, is a recipe for distraction and depression, both personally and as a community. We must simply accept what we cannot know, even in principle, and create what it is possible to know when problems arise. At a personal level, contemplatives have long known that being overly focused upon the future, to hope for it or to fear it, or to be overly focused on the past, especially via regret, is a recipe for subjective emotional disaster. We should live in the present moment rather than forever being agitated about our fears about the future and regrets about the past, and modelling over and again in a kind of virtual reality the worst of what might happen and the worst of what has been. That's as a matter of personal psychology and mental tranquility. As a matter of intellectual discourse, it is no accident that pessimism saturates academia because of the fact so many are engaged in trying to guess at a future they cannot know. They call it prediction, but it is no such thing, for it cannot help but ignore what choices people are yet to make, what other problems they might encounter before the looming disaster imagined by the prophet, or, most importantly, what knowledge might be created. So, whether it's personally or intellectually as a community, Do not prophesy. Create and criticize. Be at peace in the here and now, making things better and solving the problems as they are here and now, rather than as you imagine they will be in the future. This is no guarantee of happiness, by the way, but it is the best guard against pessimism and dismay. Not only does no one know the future, no one can know the future, quite literally. And that is because we are always in the process of creating it. We choose or we fail to choose. It's our choice to create and innovate or to sit back and stagnate. The choice should be clear for anyone who actually wants to accelerate.